Good morning, Power Hour Nation. A great day to be alive, great day to be in America or wherever you are throughout the world listening to this broadcast. I'm your honored host, Daniel Brigman. Welcome to the Power Hour radio show. ThePowerHour.com, ThePowerMall.com are our two websites. Great broadcast as usual. Larry Pinkney, he's going to be here the second hour. Uncle Kevin will be joining us with some news stories, and there are some very important stories. You know, ask yourself a question. If supposedly the Electoral College has voted, well, they have. If the Electoral College has voted, it's a done deal. Biden's going to be president. Then just for kicks and giggles, why has Kamala Harris not resigned as senator and gotten ready to be vice president? Can anybody tell me that? Anybody tell me that? Very interesting. We'll talk about that and more on the second hour, and probably with our first guest. Our first guest is Reverend William Cook. He's the founder and head of Black Robe Regiment, blackroberegiment.us. That's of course, an allusion to the pastors in the 1760s and 70s that really fomented revolution in America. I got the chance to meet him in Houston at our meeting. We facilitated getting him there and just really hit it off meeting him. Some Power Hour people got behind him, and he's doing great work. He just recently spoke at the Jericho March in Washington. He's out there fighting a good fight, and we got a lot to talk about, and we're so glad to have him. Pastor Cook, welcome to the Power Hour.
Thanks, Daniel. It's a pleasure to be with you. It's an honor to be with you. Thanks for having me today.
Yes, absolutely. The Black Robe Regiment, just that name has such an illusion. I mean, in my mind, just such a positive, powerful illusion of the past. Why don't you just give us a little synopsis about yourself. Why did you start this Black Robe Regiment, modern day's life?
Well, first of all, a little history. The name Black Regiment was not something that was chosen by those who were called the Black Robe Regiment. It was something the British applied to the American clergy during the before and during the American Revolution, because the clergy had preached the principles of government in the founding charters. Probably had been preached in this country for 100 years from the time that the Mayflower landed on our shores. And so that they had made the clergy had made the political ideology in the charters of what were called what came to be known as the founding charters, but in the charters of freedom also had preached that those ideas for 100 years before first shots were fired in the American Revolution. So that the ideology that represented the founding charters had become ubiquitous among the people. And when it came time to stand up for their just rights, for their God-given rights, the people did not hesitate, nor did the clergy. They were as active in the war as the people were. It wasn't just people fighting for their freedom, the clergy standing on the side and saying and cheering them on. The clergy were actively engaged in the revolution. They fought in the revolution. They led troops in the revolution. And it was their preaching that really had been blamed for what the British called the rebellion. We call the War for Independence. And that's why they called them the Black Regiment. It was a derisive reference to their black robes, because they had figured so prominently in the drive to independence.
Why is it that, compared to today, obviously, I want to get into some of the history, the stories I love, but just overall, why is it that today preachers seem so neutered, for lack of a better word?
Well, I would say it's because, this sounds like this is probably a little bit trite to put it this way, because there's probably a lot of things that have factored into that, but I think there has been a concerted effort. There's always been a concerted effort by evil to dumb down the church, to make the church impotent in its relationship to liberty, because tyranny really, that comes from the enemy, our enemy, the devil. And, there's been a lot of false teaching over the years that we're supposed to be pacifist, we're supposed to sit down and roll over when tyranny comes to destroy us. Suffering for Christ is better than, standing up and fighting for liberty, and et cetera, et cetera. And we've part of it has been the communist penetration of our country, our government, our media, our education, our courts, everything that has been, everything that you can imagine. And there's been a long-term effort to re-educate the American people. And much of it has been bought into by the church. The church has been as infiltrated by Marxists as any other institution in the United States. And so there's a lot of ignorance born of deception in the church.
What would you say to, you know, I have an uncle who's a pastor of a small congregation, and he has told me flat out about some of these seminaries that you wouldn't believe how liberal, for lack of a better word, exactly what you said, Marxist, he says liberal, that these seminaries have become. What would you say to, you know, people, obviously a lot of our listeners go to church, they're familiar with church life or whatever. What would you say to the people in church to help them to change that dynamic?
Well, to the people in the church, I mean, to the people in the pew, I would say you need to hold your pastors accountable for liberty, for supporting the, you know, for defending the blessings of liberty. If when a pastor won't speak up, at a minimum, just won't even do something as simple as speak up and tell the truth regarding the things that are going on in our country, it won't challenge evil in our government, then they are not really being a shepherd. You know, Jesus said a good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. And when a pastor refuses to speak out, refuses to teach his flock how to behave as citizens, how to behave in a way that would promote liberty, would promote their benefit, then he ceases to be a shepherd, because he's not laying down his life for the sheep. He's putting, you know, perhaps being liked by, you know, those who are persuaded liberally in his congregation or whatever, he's really surrendering his sheep to whatever tyranny is rising up against them in the nation. And so it's important. I mean, pastors spoke out against tyranny. I mean, the things that the pastors during the 18th century spoke out about were, you know, it's hard to even call them tyranny today compared to the things we see today.
Yeah, give us an example. Give us an example.
An example would be the Stamp Act. You know, it's what that represented. It might have seemed at the time like a small thing, you know, to put a tax, a levy, a tax on stamps. But, you know, they saw it as an invasion of their liberties, and they considered it very serious. It was maybe by today's standards, it would be a small thing. I mean, today we have, you know, income tax, which was never, you know, it's not something that we had in America for our whole history. And, I mean, that would have never seen the light of day in the 17th century. You know, it just wouldn't have happened. And, but today we have the government telling us that, well, abortion is okay. The Supreme Court stands up and says, yeah, abortion's not murder. You can do that. You have a right to your body. I mean, it's any number of outrages. We have a government now today that's telling us that it's okay to engage in sodomy and to marry someone of the same sex, which is just, it's impossible based on the definition of marriage, God's definition. And yet, and that would have started a war. We would have been in full-blown war right now over that, because in that period, it was a capital offense to be caught in the act of sodomy. And, you know, people were hung for it because they understood what had happened. They believed what had happened to Sodom and Gomorrah. And they knew that the end, you know, that road leads to hellfire and brimstone. So they would have dealt with it. But today, we are tolerating everything in the name of so-called liberty. And our nation's come to the point of destruction because of this. You know, I think all the things we see today, this attempt to steal our election, all of it is just the fruit of the shedding of innocent blood. You know, the whole terrain of America, the entire fruited plain is covered in the blood of innocents.
Oh, gosh.
And if we don't think God is going to hold us accountable for that, we've got another thing coming.
I remember growing up in the 80s, and you know, there were pastors, even local pastors. There was quite an energy about this abortion issue. And there were people marching, and there was a fervor about it. I grew up in the South, so I don't know other parts of America. I could just remember feeling that and seeing that as a, you know, growing up, young child into my teenage years, that I don't see anymore. I don't see that same fervor even in the South. Why are pastors, it's like they're not even discussing abortions anymore. It's like it doesn't even exist.
You know, Daniel, I don't know why. I mean, it is, you're right. It's very few people talk, pastors talk about it. I think, you know, that's kind of the period when I decided to go into the ministry and become a pastor. And I think a lot of it is that, you know, there's been this, during the 80s and 90s, there was a movement to grow your church, you know, and here's how you become seeker sensitive, and here's how you, how to grow and maintain an audience and all of that. And I think what happened was pastors were told, hey, you got to put aside these, quote, controversial issues and stop talking about them because people don't want to hear about it. Well, people don't want to hear about sin, but it's imperative that it's talked about. And so I think what's happened is the preaching in the pulpits of America has been reduced to pabulum. What makes you feel good? If you look at the websites of the largest churches in America, who have really developed an ability to grow a church, you'll find that few of them, not all, but few, will preach the whole counsel of God, because the whole counsel of God is hard. You know, you have to address some issues that are difficult. And you know, when you're trying to sustain a large organization and a large operation, you know, it's important that you have people come into your church. So you don't want to chase them away by saying, you know, you have to repent. You know, but God expects us to do that. He expects us to preach the whole counsel of God no matter what, even if it costs us everything. He expects us to do that. And it's kind of like, if you don't like the heat, get out of the kitchen. You know, if you don't want to do that, then maybe you need to find another place to
do something else.
Cook,
yeah.
Because, you know, we don't realize it today, but think about this. In past elections, 40 million evangelicals have not voted. That's not a hard thing to do, is go to a poll and cast a vote and to be informed, at least minimally informed. It's not hard for a Christian to vote. You just look at one issue, abortion. If a candidate supports abortion, he's out. You don't vote for him. You vote for the guy that doesn't. And yet, we have Christians today saying, well, you know, I'm more about race. I'm more about unity. I don't think abortion is the most important issue, but human life is the plumb line. And I think we just can't, when 40 million people don't vote, think about it. Who's to blame for all the evil that follows in government? If the good people of the country, the people that are supposedly good and know the truth, don't do their part. I think the church is to blame for the things that we have today, because so many don't vote.
We're I agree.
To blame to a degree.
I agree with what you just said completely, but also the other side of it, it becomes even clearer with this last election, is I don't know if America's been choosing some of these things. You know, how long have we been?
No, I think you're right. I think you're absolutely right.
How long
have this fraud has gone on for probably a couple decades or more. And I think some of the people that are in office, like Ralph Northam in Virginia, I don't think he's really the governor. I don't think he won. I don't think that some of the liberals that won in the down ballot elections are really the people that should be in those positions.
You know, I look at North Carolina, for example, the Governor Cooper there. I have family in North Carolina. You know, they're generally conservative, my family. They hate that governor. Trump won North Carolina. My cousin, I've had her on, talk about what happened to her vote, how you go to the Secretary of State website, her vote was changed the way she, you know, they don't show who she voted for, but the way she voted was changed, literally changed on the on her ballot and in on the computer, on the register. And that governor won. I'm like, there's no way that governor won. That governor, people hated that governor because he was so draconian in the way he was locking down. And it's, you know, my cousin and my aunt were like, well, I don't know, how in the world did he get reelected? I would say I don't think he did get reelected. I think they cheated. I mean, I think we're seeing that everywhere.
No, I agree with you. I think they did too. And I would say to any governor that hears this broadcast today that was fraudulently put into office, I want to tell you that the day of reckoning is coming very soon.
Ooh.
And you are going to be exposed and taken out of office. And I don't know if it's going to be done nicely, gently, or how it's going to be done, but you're going, you're leaving, because you got into office through fraud, and you're an imposter. And that's what I want to say to those governors. Your days are numbered.
Whoa.
So get ready.
Do you feel we're in a race? Because I think there's a race between, particularly Christians, because it's the Christian energy, the Christian ethic that really has moved America one way or another. Either are sitting on our hands or actually getting involved one way or another. That's how America goes. But don't you think it's a race how Christians are waking up now and seeing this, and they're getting angry, and they're getting to the point where they're ready to do something drastic? Or, you know, are they going to dumb down and shut this down to where it's almost impossible? It almost seems like a race to me. Do you see that?
I think that what's happening is, I can spiritualize it and say that God is allowing evil to fully expose itself. And once that is done, the hammer's coming down, and it's going to be sudden, it's going to be complete, and I believe this entire rebellion is going to be put down. This entire lie is going to be exposed and crushed. I think that you're going to see some powerful people in Washington go disappear. I think that Justice Roberts has done evil. I believe he's going to be gone. You know, he's fighting for his very, I think he's fighting for his own existence right now, and he's going to be gone. And I
really?
Think some of the people that have been so strident in evil, people like Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer, God is going to take them out. You know, it's interesting how silent they've been in the last few weeks. Usually when you see them, their lips are moving.
We got about 3-4 minutes before the first break, and you spoke at the Jericho March yesterday. I watched a little bit of your interview with General McInerney. What are, you know, as you've made contacts with these people and the general, what is their sentiment, you know, behind the scenes? What are they telling you is about to happen from a logistics standpoint?
I think that some of them are still fighting as if we are going to turn this thing around. And I think that men will be instrumental in turning it around. But I think God is doing something very powerful right now. And I think God is going to turn it around in a powerful way. You can say he's going to use the hand of man to do it. But I think some people still think there's a chance we can lose this. I really don't think there's any chance we're going to lose it. I think Donald Trump's going to be president for 4 more years. And I think that this is just what I feel from what I've heard prophetically in my own heart. I've said since the day of the election, Donald Trump won, and he's going to be the president, and nothing's going to stop that. And so I've stood by that, even though I fought as hard as I could to do what I could to keep that to make sure that happens. So, I think there's times where the Lord just says, stand still and see the salvation of the Lord. You've done all you can do. Having done all, stand and see the salvation of the Lord. That's what I think we're going to see.
I tell a story semi-often about the crossing of the Delaware with Washington. And it's kind of typical of America. It's a metaphor, a much grander scale of the United States, of what our country is. You have Washington and his troops were, only a third of the people that came to the shore actually made it. They were supposed to be there. It took twice as long to cross the Delaware as they had planned. Many of the soldiers did not have shoes. They literally had wraps on their feet. Literally, blood was left in the snow as they marched to Trenton to take the stronghold. But then at the same time, you have a British spy who preceded them, who had all the information, was ready to warn Britain about the invasion, and yet he was captured by the Haitians who didn't speak any English, and he sat in a jail cell that night while Washington invaded. So on one side, you have the unbelievable sacrifice, the blood, literal blood, of the revolutionaries, and then on the other hand, you have the providence, the good fortune, the dumb American luck, whatever you want to call it, that kept that spy in the jail that night. You have the providence and hand of God meeting the sacrifice and unbelievable conviction of the revolutionaries. I think that's kind of a metaphor for America.
Yes, you know, it really is. I mean, on one end, I agree with you. On one end, you've got God moving his providence to create America, and then you have, you know, but God is also proving us on the other side to see how badly we really want it, to find out what we're willing to go to what ends we're willing to go to secure the blessings of liberty. And, you know, it's, you know, God is testing us. The church is really being weighed in the balance right now in relation to what's happening. Are we going to give our all to save this country? And I've been, you know, one of the things I've said, Daniel, since this whole thing is played out, is that the church is really the one that's being weighed in the balance right now. God wants to know if we mean it. How badly do we want to preserve the blessings of liberty? To what ends will we go to do that? Mm. Will we lay down our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor? Mm. You know, and I, you know, that statement moves me because I believe that's what we're called to do right now, is to lay down our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor for the cause of liberty. Liberty is so precious. It is so beautiful. And, you know, for any of us that have children like myself and have grandchildren like me, I have 10 grandchildren, you know, when I say lay down our lives for liberty, lay down our lives, our fortunes, our sacred honor, it's for them. In my case, it's one of the main reasons I do it. It's the main reason I do all of what I do.
We're coming on a break, about 30 seconds. You know, the Declaration of Independence is—it's almost, to me, it's almost scripture. You know, parts of it about the you know, we hold these truths to be self-evident, the endowment of man by the Creator. And it is the link between our Creator, literally, and our legal system here in America. That's what I see. But yet, I don't think the church has made that connection. Let's talk about that on the other side. There's the music. Let's talk about that on the other side. Sorry, Pastor. We're talking to Pastor Cook, Pastor William Cook, BlackRobeRegiment.us is his website. Check it out. You're listening to the Power Hour. Stay tuned.
Boost your immune system naturally this year with olive oregano, a potent germ killer. This is the true wild oregano oil P73, a blend of edible spices of wild oregano grown on natural mineral-rich soils. Research published in the International Journal of Food Microbiology found that olive oregano is an excellent germicide capable of killing a wide range of fungi and bacteria. Get it today by visiting thepowermall.com or calling 877-817-9829. As you all know, everything begins with an idea. Ideas have helped shape the very world we live in. ThePowerMall.com began as an idea, allowing entrepreneurs and small business owners like yourself the opportunity to not only survive, but thrive in an era where corporations dominate. ThePowerMall.com is a small family-owned business who has partnered with companies you've come to rely on and trust over the years, like Strauss Heart Drops, North American Urban Spice, Miracle 2 Soaps, Vitamir, Numana Food Storage, to name just a few. Fight back against large corporations when you buy from thepowermall.com. Need to speak to a real person? Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
Break the bond of Big Pharma. Hi, it's Joyce Riley with the Power Hour to tell you about the powerful benefits of Strauss Heart Drops. Many people today are locked into the routine of taking multiple prescription drugs. Strauss Herb Company believes that everything the body needs is provided by nature. Strauss Heart Drops may clear congested arteries, restore damaged muscle, maintain healthy cholesterol levels, and flush toxins and metals from the body. They may even be helpful in treating varicose veins. And unlike prescription drugs that are packed with chemicals, Strauss Heart Drops are 100% natural and harness the healing power of herbs like garlic, cayenne, white willow bark, and mistletoe. For the full line of Strauss products, I urge you to call the Power Hour at 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Or visit thepowermall.com. And remember, beware of knockoffs. Get the original. Get Strauss Heart Drops. it's Joyce Riley with the Power Hour. There's something really fun and exciting about discovering products that make life more pleasant and enjoyable. Well, Miracle 2 soaps definitely fit that description. The shelves at the supermarket are packed with soaps and cleansers that are full of chemicals that slowly destroy our health and the environment. Miracle 2 products are all natural, like the green soap that can replace your bath, laundry, household soaps, and cleaning products. And please try Miracle 2's skin lotion. It's quickly absorbed and not greasy like all those other mass-produced lotions. Miracle 2 moisturizer is full of fabulous oils and emollients that leave the skin healthy and baby soft. I guarantee after you discover how amazing Miracle 2 products are, you'll recommend them to everyone you know. Just call 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Or visit thepowermall.com. You'll learn why so many people say it's not just soap, it's a miracle.
If you eat your Mana food on a semi-regular basis, you're probably getting better quality food and healthier for your body than you're eating now.
Your products are GMO-free. There's no added MSG and no chemical preservatives or high fructose corn syrup. And you also have gluten-free products as well.
We have a great variety of very high-quality products.
Call 1-877-817-9829 right now and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
The Power Hour has been in existence since the turn of the 21st century. It is more critical than ever for you to sign up for our free newsletter and our breaking news. Simply text the word Power Hour to 22828 on your mobile phone or sign up when you visit thepowerhour.com. Our website again is thepowerhour.com or text Power Hour to 22828. Together, our legacy will live on for centuries.
You know how I feel about the Strauss products. We have another new one, the Strauss Bladder Support. I encourage you to check it out. It goes with the kidney, the prostate, the CardioCom, and, of course, the Heart Drops, which is the most profound product that we've ever sold at the Power Mall. All on sale at thepowermall.com, 877-817-9829. Of course, we have the quercetin. Try that quercetin. Oh, my gosh. Excuse me, guys. I got the hiccups all of a sudden. Holy cow. Zinc and the precious prill beads are back by popular demand, including that, and the transderma magnesium oil is also back. Check out that and some other things. Look, if you want to get it for Christmas, I think today is your day. I think you can, depending on where you live. But if you order today, that'd be it's a great Christmas gift. It's a great stocking stuffer. The Vitamir products, toothpaste. You know, my mother used to put toothpaste in my stockings or different things like that, or socks, or you know, whatever. There's some great things at the Power Mall you can get for people, stocking stuffers or just gifts altogether. Heart drops are a great gift for somebody. They're a great gift. Give the gift of life. Give the gift of energy. Give the gift of health. We want you happy, healthy, successful, and free as God intends you to be over at the Power Mall, 877-817-9829. Thank you for your support, your donations, your purchases. We're here because of you. And as you can see, the censorship is, again, I told the story. I'll tell the story again quickly. My wife wanted me to help her write up a little 1-2-page thing about just kind of some general information about this COVID vaccine. I wrote it up. I cut and pasted it, put it in the body of an email to send to herself so she could check it out here. What do you think of this? The email server on Hotmail would not take it. They said, this is unacceptable, or I can't remember the exact words. It would not accept it. I thought, oh my gosh. So I did a test email right after. Test 1, 2, 3, 4. Boom. Went right through. The letter was not in there. And I did it again today. I did the letter. Boom. Stopped it. Would not send the letter again. You think the war for independent thought, you think the war for what you think and what you're able to discuss is not massive and is going on right behind the scenes, behind the curtain, so to speak? It is massive what we are going through, and we are here because of you and because of your prayers, number one, your purchases, your donations, your energy. We're here because of you and of what you've done at the Power Mall. Buy from the good guys, will you? Buy from us. Don't buy from Amazon. Quit giving Jeff Bezos or China money. You don't even know if the stuff's real. 877-817-9829. We appreciate it. God bless you. And let us know of anything we can do to try to expedite Christmas gifts or what have you. We'll do what we can. Our guest today, our first guest, We're talking to Pastor William Cook from the Black Robe Regiment. And yes, it has allusions to the 1770s and the name that the Britain disparagingly gave to the pastors of America. They fomented revolution. The spiritual discussion in America fomented physical war and the outpouring of the Declaration of Independence and the Bill of Rights and the Constitution and the law. Where the Spirit of God is, there is liberty. Well, Pastor Cook is riding that wave and trying to reinvent it in a certain way, in a modern way, with the Black Robe Regiment. Not reinvent it, but just bring it back. And he's here, and we're excited to have him. Pastor, getting back to the, kind of the question that we were discussing before, you know, I don't know where you want to go with it. I guess take it any different way that you care to.
Well, let me say one thing. First of all, I want to give credit to whom credit is due regarding the name Black Robe Regiment. Really, I learned about the Black Robe Regiment from David Barton, and also there's other pastors who have taught some of the history. And I just, because I loved it so much and saw so much promise in it, it's the reason I adopted it as a name. So when I say America's Black Robe Regiment, it doesn't mean that I'm leading everyone in the country that sees themselves as a Black Regiment leader. But it's really just a construct under which to establish what I call regiments in every state, in every political jurisdiction in America, for the purpose of asserting their own and the vital leadership and influence of their flocks in civil government. And so that's what... It's just a construct under which to establish state regiments like the Black Robe Regiment of Virginia, of Pennsylvania, of Tennessee, of whatnot. So it's not because I stake claim over all the others. And there's guys like Dan Fisher, who's a good friend. He's done a tremendous amount of work in that area. He has a wealth of history that he's researched and uncovered on it. So these guys are friends. You know, we want to work together. And the movement is not owned by anyone, really. It is just everyone who identifies with the same mission to secure the blessings of liberty. Every pastor who wants to do that and sees a need to really stand up and fight for that liberty.
Well,
so just to say that up front, yeah.
Well, you're modest. That's very nice. Very nice. And thank you for saying that. The Declaration of Independence, I personally see the Declaration of Independence as akin to Scripture, certain parts of it. And that is the connection to me, for our heritage, the covenant on Israel throughout the Bible. That is the link. America's link to the Bible is the Declaration of Independence and the Bill of Rights. That's my thoughts. I would like to get your thoughts on that.
I think you're right. I think that, you know, when Jefferson wrote the Declaration of Independence, he admits he didn't have to refer to any outside source in crafting the Declaration, because really when he wrote it, the ideas in the Declaration had been made so common among the people that he didn't have to refer to anything. He could just recall from memory the things that he had heard. So when we think of the founding fathers, we don't often think of the clergy, but the clergy were more responsible for the founding of America than really the founding fathers were. The founding fathers were what I would call the framers. They're the ones that kind of crafted the whole thing. But really the clergy were the ones who had made those ideas ubiquitous in the hearts and minds of the people, so that when it came time to defend liberty, the people were ready. There had been a revolution in the hearts and minds of the people, fomented by the truth that they had been taught from the clergy. And, you know, we hear about philosophers like John Locke and so forth. Well, Locke was a Christian, they may have used some of his language, but those ideas, all of them, came out of the Bible. And, I mean, it's really, you could say, brilliant, but it's really the most inspired charter of any nation in history when you think about it, except for perhaps even Israel.
Go ahead. I didn't mean to cut you off. I thought you were pausing.
Well, one thing I was going to say, you know, you think about Jesus, and one of the names given to Jesus in the New Testament, Paul used it, or one of the writers of the New Testament called him the last Adam. And when Jesus came out of the tomb and commissioned his disciples, what did he say? He said, all power in heaven and in earth, or all authority in heaven and in earth, is given to me. I guess that leaves none for the devil. And so what the last Adam did was he restored everything that Adam surrendered to the serpent in the fall when he sinned, when he rebelled. And so when he said, all authority is given unto me in heaven and earth, then I'm commissioning you as my regents to go into all the world to proclaim this message of liberty to every creature. And that's what the gospel is. It's a gospel of liberty. And so he's saying, call all men under my government, because I have all government now. I am now the last Adam. And go preach this to all men. They that believe the message and surrender will be saved. And those who do not believe are rebels, and they will not be saved. They will continue on their current course toward eternal damnation. And so that's what I see. I see that the church is really, think about this, the church under Christ is the only legitimate governing body on earth. So for the church to say, we don't want any part of government is absurd, because by its very nature, by what God has done in the death, burial, and resurrection of Christ, is he's established a new man, a new government, a new Adam, the last Adam. And so, I don't know if this is making a lot of sense, but the whole idea of the ecclesia is government. Yes. And so the idea of separation of church and state is the most absurd thing that's ever been conceived in the pit of hell. And, if we vacate our role, our office of government, then we are surrendering the civil society to destruction. And God's going to hold us accountable to that. I think we have to assert ourselves in civil government, and that's what we're calling pastors to do.
I know you've talked extensively about some of the history. Why don't you tell us one or two stories about some of the pastors, some of the things they did, so people can kind of connect that back to today?
Well, some are more dramatic than others, but I'll tell the story of Jonas Clark to start out. Jonas was the pastor of the Church of Christ in Lexington. He was a patriot. He was very involved in the government up there. He wrote all the significant government papers for the region and for his region. He also helped to train the local militia, the Minutemen, with John Parker, so that he was I think it's John Parker, but it's
yes.
Captain Parker anyway.
Yes, Parker,
and and so he helped to train them. Plus, 75 of the men of his church were members of the Minutemen. The night that Paul Revere rode into Lexington to warn them the British were coming by land, he stopped at the home of Jonas Clark, knocked on the door at midnight, and it just so happened, and I think Revere knew this, that Sam Adams and John Hancock were staying with Clark that night, as they often did, because they often couldn't find safe haven in Boston. They'd come to Lexington. And Clark had to be awakened by Revere's knock on the door. And when they came down, Revere notified them, hey, the British are coming. They have orders to steal the weapons and powder. And they also have orders not to return from their journey without the headless bodies of Sam Adams and John Hancock.
Wow.
And when they were notified of that, one of the two men turned to Clark and said, sir, will your people fight? Now, this is a pastor. Listen, this is a man who believes that, blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God. Well, the pastor responded, I have prepared them for this very hour. And indeed he had. He had helped to train the militia so that when they fell out at 1 a.m. in the morning, they began to muster on Lexington Green, the lawn of Clark's church. Clark went out to meet them at 2 a.m. to greet them, and I assume he prayed with them and encouraged them. And the next morning, he watched the whole scene, the whole skirmish unfold from his parsonage door. And when the battle was over, he didn't run into his church and say, I knew I should have observed separation of church and state, which was nowhere in the founding documents. He went into his church a year later. No, at least one more thing. He had lost 8 of the men of his church who were dead. 10 were wounded. So that was a sacrifice. He went into his church a year later and effectively preached on the anniversary, from this date shall redound the liberty of the world. And that was a prophetic statement. Well, that event set the colonies on fire, because the people felt that the British had engaged in an act of murder against the people of Lexington. And so Jonas, pastor in Hopewell, New Jersey, Jonas, Joab Houghton, when he heard 3 days later what had happened in Lexington, he called the men of his church together in Hopewell, called his church together. He said, men, the brethren are murdering our brethren of New England. Who goes with me to Boston? And with that, Joab Houghton led all the men of his church off to fight the British in Boston. So, and that was not an uncommon thing. There were a lot of pastors who did that and that fought in the Revolution, that led troops in the Revolution. So they just didn't offer verbal support for the war for independence. They fought in it. Many of them gave their lives. They made a great sacrifice. Some lost their whole families. And why? Because they believed that liberty was precious, and it was more valuable than anything they owned. So they were willing to lay down everything. And why would the founding fathers have been willing to lay down their lives, their fortunes, and sacred honor if they hadn't been taught that? And so, you know, we're wanting to run from the battle if we lose a lawsuit. And, you know, and but another pastor, Pastor Peter Muhlenberg, he pastored 8 churches in the northern Shenandoah Valley, which the Shenandoah was the frontier of America at that time. And he was active in state politics. He was a member of the Virginia House of Burgesses, and he was in Richmond to hear Patrick Henry's Liberty or Death speech. And when Henry motioned that the counties in Virginia be put into a state of defense, form their own militia, Muhlenberg was the first to second Henry's motion, the pastor, the peacemaker. And so while he was there, George Washington asked Muhlenberg if he would take a commission in the Continental Army as a colonel, which he accepted. And he headed back to Woodstock, Virginia, where he was from, and prepared to preach his farewell sermon. Well, since he pastored so many churches in the northern Shenandoah, the Sunday that he went into the pulpit to preach his farewell sermon, the church was so packed, Little Log Church was so packed that people were standing out in the church cemetery. And again, it's just because the news had really put the colonies in a state of great excitement, as you might say. And Muhlenberg preached his sermon that day out of Ecclesiastes 3, verses 1-8, which ends, you know, which is that there's a time for this and there's a time for that part of Scripture. And when he came to the 8th verse, there's a time for war and a time for peace. And a voice that thundered, the record says, because he wanted the people in the graveyard to hear him. He wanted the dead to hear him, I suppose. He said, in the language of Holy Writ, there's a time for all things, a time to preach and a time to fight. The time to fight has come. He then said the benediction, came down from the pulpit, ordered drums to begin beating for recruits at the rear of the church. And when all was said and done that day, he had recruited 300 men from the frontier to form the 8th Virginia Regiment, which he marched off to war with and fought very capably, became Washington's one of his most capable brigadier generals, and was eventually breveted to the rank of major general at the war's end. And, you know, it's the interesting response he gave when his flock at the end of the war begged him to come back and be their pastor, because obviously he was a hero at that point. They asked him to come back, please be our pastor. And he said, I can't build a house of God, for I am a bloody man, because he had shed blood in the Revolution. And so he decided to run for Congress, and he became a 3-term congressman, a 1-term senator, and died on the day he was born at 61 years of age. And I'm older than him now. But, you know, what's interesting is his brother Philip, who initially criticized him for leaving the pulpit for the battlefield, criticized him because it was a Lutheran family. Their father founded the Lutheran Church in America. They argued they had a contest in letters, came to be known as the Battle of the Quills. And by the end of the war, Frederick came around to Peter's way of thinking. He supported the war. I guess it happened after his church got burned down in Rhode Island. And he ran for Congress and became the first Speaker of the House. So there you have two clergy in Congress who didn't get the memo about separation of church and state. And there were several clergy in the first Congress. And what amazes me is how somehow the Supreme Court found the word separation in a letter that Jefferson had written that wasn't even in the Constitution, and how dutifully the church today has been made to comply with the idea of not talking about politics, not talking about government, and yet for over 200 years, political sermons, election sermons, something called an artillery sermon, were preached in America for over 200 years, and yet somehow today we think it's immoral even to talk about government from the pulpit, which is absurd. And we're literally surrendering our country to tyrants because we won't preach on things that matter in relation to government.
To me, you know, this line to me, and we talked about this in the meeting in Houston, the line, you agree, disagree, add to, take away, whatever you want. I think the line is the Bill of Rights, because the Bill of Rights is kind of the keystone of our charter, which is the Declaration of Independence. The Declaration of Independence is what connects us to our political, our spiritual heritage and the covenant with God. To me, that's how I see it. And so the line for us, when a pastor, when a preacher, when the church sees the Bill of Rights violated, they should look at it, well, they're violating our foundation, our legal protection of our spiritual heritage. It's just, they might as well be attacking the Bible if they're going to attack the Bill of Rights. That's how I look at it. That's how I think preachers should look at it. Do you agree, disagree, what?
I agree. I agree. I wholly agree, Daniel. I would say that when you see the Bill of Rights and the other charters of liberty or freedom being attacked, you know, you just have to understand that the enemy is just moving obstacles out of the way to get to you. That's all they're doing. And if, you know, that's what is happening right now. The church does not realize in its attitude of separation and its idea that it should be separate is the enemy is simply removing obstacles to he's removing obstacles to get to you, and what he has in heart in his mind is massacre. That's what's coming if we don't stop it. If we think that you know, we need to just be willing to suffer for Christ, well, that's fine if you want to suffer for Christ, but you're also, when you have that attitude, you're sacrificing your children and the larger society to that same thing. And it's not your prerogative to decide who else is going to suffer because you don't want to get involved. You know, that's really criminal. And God is going to hold us accountable. I think there's going to be a lot of surprises when people stand before God and assume, well, I asked Jesus into my heart one time and I know I'm still saved. Well, you know, I think you're going to be surprised when you find out what you did in your passivity in relation to what is happening. I think God expects us to stand up in defense of those who cannot defend themselves. That's what I think he expects.
I've had so many discussions with religious people, you know, or religious discussions about this, and they talk about, well, my religion is this, my religion is that. To me, the Christian religion is liberty. There is, where the Spirit of God is, there is liberty. There is nothing else. Liberty is our religion. The mandate, the universal mandate and covenant of mankind from our Creator is that of liberty. And if we don't have that endowment protected, then we are literally offending God. If we do not defend the Declaration of Independence, if we do not defend the Bill of Rights, we might as well slap the covenant and mandate of our universal Creator right in the face. To me, that's what we're doing. Your thoughts on that?
Yes, you're right. I think that we have a covenant. I think it was established at Cape Henry. And we were down there a couple of weeks ago, you know, renewing our covenant to carry the gospel to the nations and to defend liberty. We were there with several people. There was I can't think of his name right now, but anyway, it was a powerful time. And others have done that too in this 400th year of the landing of the pilgrims. And it's been a time to renew covenants because our covenant is not just the declaration. It goes all the way back to the Mayflower Compact.
Yes. Yes.
And it's a holy calling. And, you know, if we sacrifice liberty, if we will not stand up and defend liberty, then God's going to hold us accountable for vacating our covenant. And that is a divine covenant. And, we have to defend it. I mean, who says that America's time has come to end? Whose idea is that? I don't believe that.
China. That's China's idea.
China.
Yeah, that's it. We're going to listen to China?
That's right. Yes, no, I don't think we are going to listen to them.
No.
And I think you're right. I think that, but we have a covenant. It is a covenant which we break at our peril. And the church made the covenant. We made the covenant. We are the children of those who made the covenant.
We will live or die, meaning America's freedom, all these things we've discussed. We will not live or die with outside forces. We will live or die with our own choices. And God will respect and honor that covenant. It will come down to what we do, period. And it doesn't matter how bleak or dark it looks. If we hold to that covenant, God will hold to the covenant. That's what I believe. Todd, we have about a minute or so before the end. Can you cut one of the commercials? I have an important question to ask Pastor. There's a story of, and I can't remember the details of it. It's so important where I think it was Samuel Adams. They're in a group. They're having a very important meeting. Somebody was going to say a prayer. They were debating it. Well, they're different religions. We're not going to hear a prayer. Samuel Adams says, you know, I can hear a prayer of a Protestant or whatever he said over, as long as he's a good man, I'll hear the prayer. And then that, and Samuel Adams kind of settled it. And at that prayer, at that meeting, that preacher, quoted and read about Psalms 35, about the pit that has been dug for us, let it be filled by our enemies. And then he prayed, and many people there that day said that's the most powerful, a prayer that they had ever heard. Do you know the history of that?
I'm sorry, I don't. But it sounds consistent with the spirit of that time. And you know, it's yeah. I mean, if it happened the way you're saying it, I love it. I love it. And I'd like to know more about it. But
I found it. I tried to find it again. I didn't spend a lot of time, but it's harder and harder to find this stuff in searching. It is so hard to find this stuff. Where it was so easy 5 years ago. Anyway,
I think you said it when you talked about being censored, and I got to tell you, I've been canceled now in the last 2 weeks by 3 different mass email companies because of the content of my email. They've literally just shut me down, and I've had to go to manually sending emails through Outlook. And I shouldn't even say that on the air because Microsoft might cancel. But that's what's going on.
I'm very excited by what you've done. I just extremely want to support it. BlackRobeRegiment.us. Everybody should check it out. Donate, get involved, pray. And I would also invite everyone, Pastor, here's something maybe you could latch on to with what you're doing. I would invite everybody at some point, once a week, every day, whatever, to read Psalm 35 and beg God to enforce Psalm 35 on America, and the pit that has been dug for us, let it be filled by our enemies, and let God
do it. I believe it's going to happen. I believe that prayer is going to be answered, Daniel. Hey, listen, Psalm I want to commend 35. You, too. Thank you for having me on. I love what you're doing. You're doing a good work, and we're all in this together. We're all fighting for this country, and I just honor you, brother, for what you're doing. Thank you.
Hey, God bless you. It's right back at you. Anytime you need, whatever you need, I can hook you up with, Pastor Wright doing a lot of these things too. You two need to get in touch. Let's start connecting people because, we're unbreakable together. We got to go.
That's right.
Larry Pinkney on the other side, BlackRobeRegiment.us, Pastor William Cook. Thank you, Pastor.
TheParamol.com believes everything the body needs is provided by nature, unlike prescription drugs that aren't meant to cover up your symptoms and contain addicting chemicals. Strauss Heart Drops are 100% all natural. Get the original. Get Strauss Heart Drops by calling Jay at 1-877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Or order online at TheParamol.com today.